Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving week. Happy not last weekend anymore.
Hell Week, as we can only refer to last week. I think I blame Dan and I for being in the same place. Bad things happen when we're in the same city.
Did we lose that weight game we met up at?
Every game since though has been awful.
Yes, because it was. But before the ACC tournament was the one and done year against UNC, I think.
Miami.
Oh, it was Miami, right?
Yeah,
the UNC game was at least close.
That happened while I was in the air.
You landed, and we were already out of it, and then
we're the good people at New York Life. Flew me to Brooklyn to watch other teams play. Get out of the first round.
Truly incredible timing. Syracuse in the ACC tournament, always an adventure. Looks like it may be an adventure once again this year based on one small sample size of last Saturday.
So we had a mega thread last Saturday. We had the football team, women's basketball team, men's basketball team, women's ice hockey team. Cross country, all in action. The women's ice hockey team beat Penn State. The cross country team did not win the national championship, sadly. And then the other three teams arrived at stadiums. And that's really the nicest thing I can say about any of those ever.
And just the fact they happened at the same time, and like, I think the entire basketball game occurred within the confines of the disaster that was the football game, and they both ended probably within like 30 minutes of each other, probably 15 minutes of each other. Really just like peak. Because like, you could argue it would be worse had the basketball game started like right after the football game, and it was just extended like 7 hours of misery, but having them both happen at the same time was pretty rough.
Yeah, it's the nice like an entertaining pocket universe of just suck from the start of the women's basketball game on. Let's talk quick about the women's basketball team before we get into the other miserable things. When the season first started, I thought things get like interesting for a few, and it seemed like there was some depth, and it seemed like there was like the fact that they weren't going to rely on like, you know, any sort of like pre-established like hierarchy of scorers like seemed great. No, that didn't mean that they were going to like win big, but it did mean that they were going to be interesting. And now I've quickly soured on on their chances to look all that great this year, especially after they lost to Buffalo in the seventh place game in Battle for Atlantis. So they finished last in the women's event down in the Bahamas. Every game, they kind of seemed like they came out looking decent, and then things quickly fell apart. That's become really a theme of this season already, and I really just wish SU hadn't mailed it in on the women's basketball hire here when it's very clear they needed some, you know, distinct like departure from what happened previously, a new direction, new permanent leadership, and it's not to knock, you know, current interim head coach Vonry too much, but it's to say that like things are clearly unsettled and clearly not in place, and I don't understand why we punted basically on an entire season here when we didn't necessarily have to.
It makes very little sense. Like, Von Reed obviously is in a pretty impossible situation, so it certainly doesn't all fall on him. But when you make a hire like him to kind of, like, keep things moving in a general direction, it's hard to sell that when he was there for all of the things that happened under Q, and obviously like he doesn't necessarily deserve the blame for those things, but you have to imagine he was at least generally aware of things. And B, like, it would have made a little bit of sense had the roster not completely fallen apart, but like he was kind of hired to keep like momentum going forward, despite the fact that all the momentum was already gone. Like, we basically have an entirely new roster this year, so why not try to trust that to some kind of up-and-comer or the person who just led a victory over Syracuse women's basketball, Felicia Legette Jack, who had her number retired earlier this year, who was, like, openly campaigning for the job in a way that you very rarely see acting head coaches for another schools do. Yeah, like, and like maybe she gets a job this coming year or whatever, but like it just it doesn't make any sense to put in the interim coach for a year when it's not like he knows, he like didn't know the players really. Like, I'm sure he helped recruit them and like was aware of them and had some hand in bringing them to Syracuse, but it wasn't like he had coached them before, because his roster is pretty new top to bottom.
Continuity, like a main thing that they said, and then we proceeded to lose like half of the inbound recruiting class and most of the roster.
Right. So like there was never going to be any continuity, because they had the players on the team had not played for him before. So it was such a lazy way to handle this bad situation when, you know, cleaning house, bringing in some like total fresh blood, potentially bringing in a legend to the program. But even if you went a completely different direction, do something. And if you're going to have like a year zero, like have a true year zero where there's actually something pointing to the future. Now we're having a year zero. And then next year, the new coach, whoever it is, assuming it's not Von Reed, is going to have such a crazy job to then start to rebuild this program from the bottom. But we're like punting on a whole season that could have been the bottom. So it's like if Georgia Tech had like fired Paul Johnson and then like brought in another triple option coach who they knew they were going to fire the following year to just keep the triple option going for some reason. Like, it doesn't, there really isn't a good argument for it, except that the powers that be didn't want to deal with it, which is super lazy and unfortunate, because the team, the program, the girls who are playing on this team now this year, like, all deserve better. So, and it's a program that, like, you know, needs investment, needs more, you know, needs a push, needs so much to keep things going. The positives that had developed under Q, like, obviously those things can go away really quickly if you don't have a will to keep to maintain them. And it, like, clearly doesn't seem like Syracuse Athletics cared enough to try to do that with how they handled this entire situation from the start. So, yeah, this is what we get. Like, obviously, you know, we didn't have like huge expectations for the program, but things have gone pretty sour pretty fast. And that's not to knock anyone on the team. Obviously, they played hard coming out of the gates in these games. But like, clearly things are just not in a great place right now. And it's hard to argue that this is better than the alternative of like, let's really start over and find a vision for the post Tillsman future.
Yeah. I'm just very concerned. And like, realistically now, like, you could have shown a clear like step forward and a strong step forward, pivoting to someone brand new, send a signal to, you know, the existing women's basketball fans in Syracuse, new women's basketball fans in Syracuse. Now they're turning the page and marketing the team around that. And unfortunately, like, since that can't happen now, I am pretty concerned about like what happens next year. Like, we know that Quentin Hillsman was getting paid quite a bit relative to his peers in women's basketball, and that's a good thing. But I'm curious, do we see the next coach get the same, you know, general pay band, so to speak, when he or she shows up? Like, do we see the same level of investment, you know, from a resource standpoint? Do we see the same level of investment or more from a marketing promotion standpoint? Like, there are a lot of intangibles here, and I'm getting increasingly concerned about the state of things long term.
Yeah, it's a legit concern, because obviously we know Q was not a Wildcat hire. He was a holdover from the Gross regime, and like, for all of the things that were not great under Gross, like investment and concern over women's sports and Olympic sports was not really one of them. Like, you could argue we like overinvested in some situations, but like, obviously there was a clear effort to make Syracuse a really holistically viewed athletic department that bore out in the Learfield rankings, everything else. And like, you can have a really solid debate over how important a lot of these things are, but I don't know, I think trying to invest in women's sports and bring some more equity to the situation and not just be a football and basketball focused entirely football and basketball focused organization is like a very good thing. And there are like reasons to do it and merits to do it for, you know, tons of obvious reasons. And to like completely go in the other direction and just like treat these programs as like second class is not the answer, especially when like the women's programs overall over the last like 10 years have probably been a good deal more successful, have, you know, competed for national championships, like almost across the board. So you know, obviously those are the things you want to do as an athletic department. And then to handle the women's basketball team, which is just a few years removed from a national title appearance, in such like a understated and like disinterested manner, at least outwardly, is really like, it's really a bad look. And like, you know, we don't know exactly what's going on behind the scenes. Maybe there's like a lot more efforts being done and there was like a better reason, but like those things aren't being communicated to anyone. So, which is another issue kind of whole cloth with how Syracuse athletics acts a lot of the time. So yeah, overall, it's just, it's really disappointing. It's disappointing to see the team kind of come out this way, but it's also like, unfortunately not that surprising because of just the lack of, hey, there was like never going to be any continuity. So we have like this kind of mishmash unit, a coach who's probably not going to be there next year. And just like a kind of a dark cloud hanging over when we could have like really moved past it if we had just handled things differently in the offseason.
Very much agreed. Dan, did you want to talk men's basketball next or football?
It's quite the Sophie's choice.
Why don't we talk men's basketball?
Yeah, that works. Let's do it.
So for people that have no idea what we're talking about, in the early part of this podcast, Syracuse lost to Colgate for the first time in over half a century.
62, I think, was the last time.
Yeah, 185. We actually like joked about this last year, that you know, Syracuse might have picked the right year to dodge the Raiders. Last year, they played, and well, ends up we didn't pick the right year because it would have been nice to dodge the Raiders this year.
I mean, we might have just had a two-game losing streak if we had played them last year.
Yeah, putting 100 up on Syracuse in the Dome is no small feat. It's not like it happens super frequently. Colgate really, they pretty much shot the lights out. 18-43 from three, 32-70 from the field overall, 18-21 from the free throw line as well. I mean, Kevin posted on Twitter the other day the shot chart, and I know Dan, you and I were talking about the Syracuse shot chart of late, just like how much of it was like a Warriors-esque, you know, a handful of shots in the paint, but everything else outside, and like Colgate really kind of like saw the apex of that against the Orange. The legend Jack Ferguson, 25 points to lead the way. Never have we nailed the random white guy pick more than with, you know, the legend, the myth, Jack Ferguson, who's just been an absolute killer against Syracuse here in recent years. Joe Girard, admittedly, 27 points. You know, if you're going to get into a three-point chucking contest, Joe Girard, your guy. And admittedly, like, performed admirably. I mean, he's super efficient. He had a really nice game, 27 points.
He was, like, the only guy who played well. Like,
yeah, realistically. I mean, Buddy had 19, but, like, you know, 2 of 6 from three. Like, I mean, SU got outshot, but more importantly, like, just defensively just fell apart completely. Against this Colgate team, and it doesn't say, I mean, not everyone's going to be able to shoot that well from three, especially on that many shots, but it wasn't just that. Like, being able to hit 18 and 21 free throws on top of that is really what pushes you over the top, and that's something that that like other teams that have tried to just shoot over the top of the dome haven't necessarily been able to, haven't necessarily been able to do, is also get themselves to the line a lot and hit a lot of shots there.
Yeah, it was like, I mean, it was a pretty impressive offensive outing for Colgate in general. Like, you know, Ferguson and then Nelly Cummings were both lights out. I know they were both 6 for 13 from three. I thought, I was actually surprised when I saw Ferguson was one of the most points. I thought Cummings hit like a shot every time he got the ball for a while there. And then Syracuse just like, it just seemed like the offense wasn't quite what we saw through the first couple games. And I do think Colgate deserves a little bit of credit. They were really, really good last year. Legitimately, like, possibly would have had this game last year had we played. I think they finished like weirdly high in the net rankings, if people remember. Like, they were like floating around the top 10 for a lot of the year, which is not what you usually see from a team like Colgate. And a lot of that was because of the scheduling quirks of last season. They basically only played conference opponents, but still, like, it was a quality basketball team last year. But, you know, I think things were aligned for stuff like this to happen. They're a pretty veteran team. You look at Ferguson, he's been there for 5 years, so he's played Syracuse 4 times now. That's not to excuse Syracuse for losing this game, because, like, it is kind of a, you know, you shouldn't lose to Colgate ever situation, and that's held firm for decades. But I do think this team's a little better than, or a decent amount better than the vast majority. Like, they lost to NC State earlier this year by 3. They also Cornell, which is interesting, but Cornell also looks like it's a little bit better than what we expect. I don't know if there's like a Jimmy Boeheim, Patrick Ewing theory type deal that going on there. But yeah, I think like if it wasn't Colgate and it was another team of that ilk from elsewhere in the country, I think we'd be a little less worked up about it. Especially because this game could end up being like a you know, potentially a Q2 or a Q3 loss and not like a really awful one.
Yeah, like Northern Iowa.
Yeah. Like I don't want to go overboard on this game, honestly, because Colgate is quality, because it's a team that's very familiar with the SU zone. They play it pretty much every year. Because they were probably really torqued up to play at the Carrier Dome when they thought they had a chance. But, you know, it's not great. So I don't know. I was way more disappointed in the football effort than I was in this one. But I get why people were just because of the history of this series. Like I understood the reaction. I just don't necessarily think it's going to be like indicative of this team, like totally falling apart. It's still a very new group. And we have a, you know, we touched on that a lot. You have a lot of new pieces that are still trying to learn how to fit together. And, you know, we were probably due for a performance like this. Unfortunately, it's against the school that's like right up the road that there's a lot of mutual history, and it wasn't against like, you know, some more nameless opponent down the road where you're like a Cleveland State type situation.
Yeah. And I mean, too, I think this also like just follows on to recent years where we've seen inexplicable to the fan base losses at the Dome, you know, Old Dominion. And then like to your point about down the road, like Buffalo, St. Bonaventure, like Syracuse fans do not want to lose to those sort of opponents under any circumstances, despite the fact that the Bonnies have been very good of late, despite the fact that Buffalo has been very good of late, despite the fact that Colgate last year was very good and really did test Arkansas for an extended amount of time in the first round of the tournament. Like, you know, ODU was NCAA tournament team.
Even that Cleveland State team that beat us in the buzzer beater was like didn't they have an upset win in the tournament that year, I think? Yeah. So like,
yeah, the Cleveland State team was also very good. So like realistically, like these have been good teams that have beaten us more often than not. But suffice to say, it just, I get that it burns a little bit more if it's a New York team. I think, Dan, when you and I were talking about the shooting approach earlier in the year, I think we were talking like it was great to see them win by a couple different ways and ultimately like not rely so heavily on the three. But when you look at the shot chart in this game, it seemed like they almost relied not enough on the three ball. And you saw a team get back into these like weird kind of mid-range habits and things that like this, I would say the roster is not necessarily suited to do.
Yeah, it's an interesting because, like, obviously Joe took his shots. He's 5 for 8. Buddy, 2 for 6. You know, I think Buddy could stand to shoot more even if he's not totally on because he presents such an issue for other teams. But, like, I don't know. We need Dick Holzweiter woken up. Like, he has not played very well in the regular season after looking, like, really good in the exhibitions. And I understand the level of play is what it is. But, like, we know he can be an effective player in these kinds of teams. And it's not like, you know, just anyone scores like nearly 30 points or whatever it was against even like the exhibition opponents. So like, it's there for him. He needs to probably take more than 4 threes with the shooting stroke he has. Jimmy, same thing. Like, he probably needs to be a little more aggressive. So I agree. I think after that first barrage of a game that we had, I almost wonder if like we're trying to be more well-rounded kind of in spite of what our actual strengths are. Not that 23 is like a super low number, but Colgate shot 43 threes. So like, I think you can find a number, especially when going mid-range is not being very effective. Because like, if we were just killing them on the inside, or we were just constantly hitting floaters and like 15-foot jumpers, that's one thing. But when it's not working, like, at least then when you're attempting something from the outside, like the opportunity cost is a little, or not the opportunity cost, but like the prize is bigger. Like you're, If you're going to be inefficient no matter what, like, you might as well take the three, to be honest.
I completely agree. We're going to pivot a little bit to just upcoming opponents for Syracuse. VCU is up next on the 24th. That's Wednesday when everyone's going to be listening to this. VCU is, again, a just for opponent, but a little bit of a defensive juggernaut. Here, 27th in KenPom in defensive efficiency. They are 4th in the country in effective field goal percentage allowed. As far as turnover percentage, they are 18th. They are 8th in three-point percentage, just 21% shooting for opponents. And they are 16th in two-point percentage. So realistically, like, they want this game to be low scoring. We want this game to be a bit of a higher scoring affair. KenPom gives VCU a 31% chance to win, and they see a 69-64 Syracuse win as the result here. I'm definitely concerned. At the same time, though, I do feel like Syracuse's offense is enough to power them to a win against the Rams. It's just weird, I guess, seeing the Rams as this sort of team. I mean, I know it hasn't been like just yesterday that they were like a much more up-tempo team, but just the same, it's going to be an interesting matchup, but one that SU, I think, is suited to win based on play style and just personnel.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what to make of this VCU team, to be honest. I haven't had a chance to watch them, but they have losses to Wagner and Chattanooga. They play all their games have been total slugfests. The winning team has had between 48 and 58 points in each of the games. VCU has held to 44 by Wagner and 54 by Chattanooga in those losses, and they only scored 48 against Vanderbilt in a win, and Vandy's still very much a work in progress. So, yeah, like, I think there's a decent chance where if we have a decent shooting night, it's going to be kind of tough for them to keep pace, because, like, if it was just a couple of games that they were playing in the 50s, that's one thing, and we've seen Syracuse teams like that, but this is, like, really not super aesthetically pleasing basketball from what I can tell.
No, it's not ideal at all. So I'm hoping that SU scores a win here. I mean, Dan talked about the Battle for Atlantis a little bit last week. Like, what do you see? Do you think this team can win this event, or do you think now, after seeing the Colgate game and how that kind of transpired, we're probably looking at, like, picking up a loss somewhere here?
Yeah, I mean, in all likelihood. It's just because the field's so strong. You know, I don't want to totally count them out. We've seen them win events like this before when we didn't expect it. But it's just a really tough field. And I think, as we saw from Colgate, even if we're not overreacting, which I'm trying not to do, I think it's very much like, all right, this is still a work in progress. Like, Bayham still has to figure out the rotations. We're still, like, kind of working all those bench guys in. We haven't really gotten Benny Williams heated up to, like, where we know he can be as a college player. Jimmy and Swider are still finding their roles. So, yeah, I would be surprised if we ran through this whole thing. But, you know, we did a couple years ago when we had that, like, Tyler Lydon team that certainly wasn't a finished product and won some games that we probably weren't supposed to. So I wouldn't totally write them off, but I'm also not expecting them to take home this trip.
Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable. For those who, like, have gone to the bracket in front of them, like we do, Syracuse will face VCU in the first round. If they win that, they will face the winner of Baylor and Arizona State. If they lose that game, they will then face the loser of that game and then play out the rest of the kind of losers. Not a loser's bracket, necessarily. There's no, like, weird losers-winners bracket, and you could still play your way to the title. But yeah, I don't love the chance to face Baylor at all, necessarily. I'd much rather face Arizona State. I'm sure most everybody else would, too. And if they happen to get past the winner of the Baylor-Arizona State game, then they'll face one of Michigan State, Loyola, Auburn, UConn. As we mentioned when this was first announced, as we mentioned previous weeks before, like, this is a very stacked field. SU's definitely going to have their hands full. Against most of these teams. Michigan State's the top 25 team. Connecticut is as well. Auburn's not too far from there. They're 30th, at least, according to KenPom. Baylor's fourth, as we mentioned. Loyola's even 33rd. Like, Arizona State might be one of the worst teams in this field. And where are they? I mean, they're still 65th, according to KenPom. So, hope the Sun Devils to win.
It's a really fascinating field, if just even from a Syracuse perspective, because obviously you have UConn floating out there, as they so often are in these things with us. But then you have, you know, Baylor, both defending national champs and also a recent NCAA tournament foe of ours. They beat us a couple years ago. You have Arizona State, a recent NCAA tournament foe of ours. Auburn, we haven't played in a while. Obviously, we played them in 2003. But like Michigan State, we played a couple years ago and knocked them out of the tournament. So it's like a weird grouping of teams that we have, like, pretty recent history with.
Yeah, which is fun, but also odd. A little more, I mean, players-wise, there's not really a ton of familiarity with the zone at this point for any of these teams, but at least fan base-wise, we're a little more familiar. We'll see what happens. I'm going to enjoy having that on in the background of my Thanksgiving festivities for the rest of the week.
Yep, always nice to have fun. I mean, I remember the one, it was Atlantis when we beat UConn along the way. Like, that was such a fun thing to have during the week, and really made us feel good about that season, and which ended up being, was that the year that we went to the Sweet 16, or was there, or the Elite Eight, or was that the year after? I don't totally remember.
That was the Final Four year?
Or the Final Four year. But it was still like a Syracuse team that we didn't really know much about. So it was a really fun way to ring in that season, which ended up obviously being very frustrating and then also super fun at the end. It was either the Final Four year or the Michigan State Sweet 16 year. I can't totally remember. Because they all meshed together. It's been too many seasons.
It was the Final Four year.
Okay. Yeah. So like it was kind of like a preview of how the tournament run felt.
Yeah, a little bit.
With this, lot of nonsense in between.
Yeah, Syracuse knocked off Charlotte. Syracuse knocked off Charlotte, then knocked off UConn, and then beat A&M by 7.
Right, and I think it was a pretty good A&M team too.
Yeah, it was a good A&M team, and that was part of why we made the tournament. We did dodge a very good Zags team, and Washington that year.
Correct.
That was pre-Hop Washington though.
Yes. Because I think Hop went there, what, the year after, 2 years after?
Yeah. All right. Well, that's enough basketball for now, Dan. Why don't we have other more miserable things to talk about. but first, why don't we talk about a little bit of beer. Dan, how was your West Coast tour of beer and other things?
It was quite nice. I mean, a lot of breweries that usually come from your side of the equation here, a couple of which we had together. After recording last week, let me go through what we had. I think I touched on most of them after the fact, but also had, I think while we were together, had Blind Pig IPA from Russian River, which was delicious. Russian River, obviously known for their Pliny's the Elder and the Younger. I could have had Pliny the Elder, but went for the Blind Pig since I hadn't had it before. Very good. Even better from one of your favorite spots, the new Next Year IPA from Highland Park, which I know you also had. Really delicious. Best IPA I've had in a long time. And then I realized I just forgot to check into a bunch of stuff after that on Untappd, so I will have to try to recreate that for next week.
Any breweries you remember going to?
I didn't end up going to any breweries, but I had a number of things from mostly West Coast. I know I had some things from Santa Monica Brewing, which were fine. I know I had some things from, I want to say, Indie Brewing. I had to check some menus. I realizing in this moment that I had really slapped on the Untappd game while for the rest of the week.
All good. All right. On my end, as you mentioned, I did have a Next Year IPA from Highland Park over at Father's office. Also had from Topa Topa up in Ventura County, Level Lime Pale Ale. It was really good. Had a bunch of Highland Park actually at my house as well. So I had America's Preference, their standard like American Pilsner. Had Good Green, their West Coast IPA, and then Timbo Pills, which I mention all the time. And then also had on Saturday night Smog City's Infinite Wishes Coconut and Vanilla. That was very, very good. I've mentioned some of the other varieties of Infinite Wishes over the course of the year. This one's probably about 8 months old at this point. So was surprised the Coconut and Vanilla stuck around flavor-wise, but still a delicious beer. Really big fan of the annual Infinite Wishes release.
That sounds delicious. I think like coconut beers can be a little hit or miss, but I tend to like them, especially if they're used more interestingly, like a stout where it's kind of obvious.
Yeah. No, I completely agree there. All right. So back to football, unfortunately. So things are in a little bit of a tailspin at this point. I'm not thrilled with how things are going, and I'm sure you aren't either, Dan.
No.
Last few games have been bad. Last three games have really been bad, but we lucked out in one of them. And I think the wheels have come off the offense and maybe the defense as well.
We discussed it last week. Like, it's hard to argue against the idea that other teams have just seen enough of the Derek Schrader experience and are just figuring it out. Like, obviously, he's still a fairly effective runner, but the passing has been so inept, and it's hard to maintain anything. Like, Sean Tucker's still getting good numbers. They're largely based on like his, obviously Schrader had a nice block on the one touchdown run he had last week, which he deserves credit for after a terrible interception. But it's just so hard to keep an offense going based on one running back who everyone knows is getting the ball a fair amount. And even like could probably be getting it more. He only had 13 carries on Saturday. when the passing attack just issues so little threat downfield. And that's just been the reality. Like, Schrader hasn't broken 100 yards in 3 weeks. He hasn't become particularly close. He's completing fewer than 50% of his passes in many of these games. Like, you can't live with an offense, unless you're doing like a full-on triple option, which we are not, you can't live with an offense that is like at 3.2 yards per attempt on 20 throws like Schrader was on Saturday. It just doesn't work. You need to have some sort of threat, even if it, like, when he was at like around 6 yards an attempt and you knew he could complete a pass over the middle of the field and he could keep things honest and he had the threat of his legs, it worked to an extent. It's obviously defenses have just figured out how to both contain him as a runner to where he's just a lot less efficient than he was earlier in the year and completely take the pass away, because I would suspect like the things he is decent at doing in the passing game, when they're the only things he can really pull off with any regularity, it's a lot easier to defend. Versus like a couple of those games where, you know, we saw the Virginia Tech game where he completed some stuff downfield. Like, he's not proving a threat with his arm nearly to the extent that we need him to for this offense to work. I think that's just pretty plain at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Sean Tucker's still fantastic and still was. I mean, the run, while Schrader, I give him full credit for throwing that block, Tucker just deciding to like completely bail on like a broken side of the line.
Yep.
And just like, nah, I'm just gonna go the other way and then run it 55 yards to the end zone. Like credit to him, I think first and foremost, but like the fact that he's just running into a wall at this point, like Schrader is missing wide open guys and everybody knows it. Babers even called it out to the media this week that like we're just missing wide open passes. I mean, there were so many balls that like were just, you know, misfire by 5 yards, just on the ground, just not where they needed to be. And like, if Schrader's hurt, then like, let's talk about it. But otherwise, like, this is a 3 week, you know, degradation of this offense to a point where like we don't have any options. He's clearly not running as well either. Whether teams are using a spy on him and keeping him, like, I think what you see, and I don't have like the concrete numbers to back this up, but I do feel like Schrader's being kept in the pocket far better by opposing defenses. And really, when he was most effective, you know, in previous games, when he was being able to roll out and then see the field a little bit better and complete passes that way, like without the ability to roll out and create this variance between, you know, and kind of a read option of throwing and running, like, Schrader is not that effective of a pocket passer, and it's become very obvious very quickly. We've also had offensive line issues. We've also had the Elmore injury that you and I discussed last week. Like, but Schrader has looked poor as a passer and as a runner. Like, really, if not for that that garbage time run last week, really just would have been pretty miserable numbers for him on the ground too. I mean, but you know, through the air, he's, like you said, less than 50% of his passes complete over the last three games. 174 passing yards total in the last three games. Not great at all. And it's getting concerning, like, that we're not seeing an adjustment necessarily on his part, on the coaching staff's part. But also, like, I mean, he really didn't do anything last week until that garbage time touchdown that told me that, like, he should have been out there any more than Jacoby Morgan or potentially Justin Lampson. And that's the issue here now, is that, like, why, I'm not saying turn the page completely, but it couldn't have been worse, really, for much of the first, you know, 2.5, 3 quarters.
Yeah, I mean, once you're down like 28-7 or whatever it was, it's hard to argue with how the ball was just not moving that we couldn't have done some kind of change. I do think it's tough going into week to this final week where you're 5-6. Like, there's still a ton to play for. And Schrader's obviously been a key in what, 4 or 5, you know, at least 4 of the wins. So it's hard to, like, argue that there should be a quarterback change going into the game. But I think you kind of have to pull the ripcord if things are starting to get out of control or you have a couple bad series, because, like, you know, you need to try to win this game and make a bowl. I think Schrader probably should start just because, like, I think throwing Morgan in there would be a really tough spot for him.
No, I completely agree.
I don't think you were arguing that either. I'm just saying, like, I think it's very easy to be like, yeah, Schrader, you know, just pull him completely. You know, he still got us to the doorstep of bowl eligibility. The problem is, like, if he is just not giving defenses enough to think about, and it's clear that Pitt's D, which is very good, has him figured out, I think then we do have to try to make a change, because you have to kind of throw the kitchen sink at this game.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really seen much in the way of trick plays this year. We haven't seen a lot of, you know, the speed that SU has on the outside, like in a Trevor Pena's out. But, like, we have players who are fast, can catch the ball. We just can't get it to them. So let's think of different ways to do that. You know, yeah. And whether it's, you know, more read options, more traditional option, even more swing passes, more like screens that we've really barely used in recent weeks, like except when we do and there's no one blocking for it, and then you end up like leaving your receiver out to try. Like, there's just a lot more we can do with this offense, and I'm not saying that we're going to win with it, but at least try something. Because, like, if I'm going to be apoplectic during this game if we're losing by a lot and it doesn't look like we're trying to do anything interesting to at least like keep it a game. I mean, you and I have talked about this. We talked about this a couple times in the last like month, even how, you know, Baber's teams, once down a few touchdowns, have a tendency to pack it in, and we're on the doorstep of a bowl game here. There's no option to pack it in here. So I'm hoping it doesn't come to this, but I'm very curious to see what happens if SU finds itself down to a very, very good Pitt offense, you know, by a few scores right off the bat.
Yeah, you would hope we would play with some fearlessness. And if that's going to another quarterback, if that's throwing trick plays, if that's just going down swinging, like, yeah, it's just like, it'd almost be easier if they were 4-7. Like, then you just play. I mean, I don't know if we would, but then the obvious move to me would be play one of the young guys, see what you have. But 5-6, I think you roll out there with your best shot. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it's something different, because, like, I feel like I've beaten hope to death, but, like, it just seems like there's been a real stagnation in terms of the development of the Schrader offense. And I know it's hard to implement these things midseason, but you also kind of took the job away from Tommy DeVito and made it pretty clear he wasn't going to be the starter. So you kind of made your bed too. Like, if we had kept Tommy involved, and obviously this is like way in the past now, but if you had kept Tommy involved, at least then you could have switched back, or you could have kept things going day to day, week to week, if he thought he had a chance. Obviously he might have still left, but the fact that, like, we kind of went whole cloth into the Schrader offense, and that's fine because it was very effective for a few weeks, but to see it kind of stall out the way it has is really disappointing, because, you know, Babers came into this job and through the first couple of years, like, was a pretty creative play caller. We saw him kind of shift things with Dungy and find creative ways to use the talent on hand. And it just really seems like it stalled out hard in this last like 3-4 week period, which raises more questions. But also for next year, like, there's going to be a lot to figure out next year, because we, you know, obviously I don't think you can just hand him the starting job going into the season. And I don't imagine Babers would ever say that, considering how he's handled things so far outside of like the last 2 years with DeVito. But, you know, we can't just like rest on our laurels either for this week or going forward, assuming Babers is back. And I do think some of the things said this week also, you know, become really interesting there, because you have Sean Tucker kind of going out on a limb for Babers today. I don't know if he meant to, but it's hard to ignore his comments in terms of potential coaching staff changes and what that might mean for his future. So I think we're kind of married to this going forward, but I don't know. Obviously, this season we thought was kind of dough for broke. Now next season, you know, you dial that up infinitely.
Yeah, I agree. I think the things that we need to see are, like, Gilbert can't stay.
I think that's
confirmed. Like, there's no way in hell that what we've seen for the last 3 weeks, it now proves what you and I and others have been concerned with, that what was working for Schrader initially was not repeatable. And I think it's clear. I think it's clear that through two full seasons almost now, that Gilbert has not been the guy and has not had any real answers. And is like, I think you and I were willing to give him a shot initially because he knew Babers' system. It seemed like he knew how to quickly kind of plug it in. And then you see what we've gotten from it, and there really hasn't been much. I think for me, it'll be hard to stay in on this regime if Gilbert returns.
Yeah, I mean, even if you want to say Gilbert was handed a tough position where he was brought in to coach one quarterback, and after a year and a half and a lot of injuries, he got a completely different quarterback, I'm fine with that explanation. But Then go find an offensive coordinator who knows how to coach a guy like Schrader. Like, go find a guy who can help build a new offense that'll maximize what Schrader can do. We'll find ways to make him a more effective passer, because it's clearly not happening with Gilbert. And, like, I mean, at worst, then you're just saying, like, Gilbert, you know, he has an opportunity now to go find a position, a situation that's more adept for his coaching style, because right now the marriage doesn't make any sense. Even if you want to be really light on Gilbert, and I think based on, like, how DeVito looked earlier this year and at times last year, it's hard to even, you know, say that, but, you know, we can give him the benefit of the doubt. At the same time, it still doesn't make sense for him to return.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if he was able to keep him around. But I've been surprised before. I think the other side of the coin here is, you know, defensively, Dan, I know we've been effusive in our praise of the defense for much of the season. I think there's been some really good bright spots. I think there's some great individual performances. But and something we touched on a little bit last week, too. There's a lot of cracks at this point. And I think teams have figured a lot out. I think the fact that the offense is less effective has made their job a lot harder. But, you know, it's not just that. I mean, they're really, really susceptible to home run plays at this point. And the safeties are really just getting completely, you know, torn apart. And it doesn't really matter, you know, how well or not Garrett Williams and Deuce Chestnut are playing at corner positions that, unfortunately, like, the top's getting taken off his defense way too often. You're seeing teams be able to like just really tear through the front, you know, three and get to the second level pretty easily with runs too. And when, you know, Kenny Pickett's not a mobile quarterback, but he's the type of guy who's going to be able to throw the ball around quite a bit. And I'm very, very concerned for what he's able to do. I mean, seeing like Devin Leary hit like 300 yards last week without much, like breaking much of a sweat. And Pickett, you know, is a like dark horse Heisman contender, Maxwell Award winner, well, Maxwell Award candidate, and everything else. Like, Pickett could really do a lot of damage against this group, and it might not matter how much this offense is able to do if this defense can't improve. Basically, like, you know, three of the last four games, this defense has gotten bombed out. You know, the exception being the BC game, and we all know why that was the case. They had, you know, a second-string quarterback who couldn't throw. Then they had a third-string quarterback who could throw, and then he got hurt, and then you ended up back with the guy who couldn't throw, and that's the main reason why, you know, SU was able to win a game with an ineffective offense there. So I'm pretty concerned about the defense in particular, and I haven't soured on Tony White, but I am wondering what exactly has gone wrong in recent weeks.
Yeah, I'm still in on White. I think the steam has been good. I think it's definitely more of a personnel issue on the back end, and having like a lot, you know, some injuries, some wear and tear, but also just a real lack of complementary football for both sides. Like, the offense struggling really hurts the defense in terms of just not being able to get off the field, having to deal with a preponderance of like long play drives, etc. The two things impact each other. So I think White, you know, overall, if you're taking last year and like for most of this year, like, has been a pretty great hire. Certainly not like a total game changer where you don't have to worry about the defense if the offense can't give them a breather, or if there are injuries. But it's definitely a concern, because like the last couple of weeks have not gone well. But I don't feel the same way about him as I do Gilbert, nor do I think you do. But against Pitt, that's going to be scary, because I think Pitt's potentially the best offense we face this year. Pickett's having an incredible year for all of the ribbing we've given him over his 17-year Pitt career. Like, he's probably going to come out with a hair on fire in a very unsettled Heisman race where his name is at least going to be somewhat floated around and could potentially get hot if he, you know, leads Pitt to the ACC championship. There's a lot for them to play for, too. So I think you're going to catch a Pitt team with a lot, plenty of motivation, which is scary considering how these last couple of weeks have gone.
Yeah, I mean, getting into predictions a little bit here. I'm assuming you're not picking Syracuse to upset Pitt, but how close do you think SU can keep this one?
I don't love it. I'm really beaten down by these last couple of weeks. What's the spread? I haven't even looked.
Actually opened at 11.
That's an interesting line. I guess 11 with a hometown help. I mean, yeah, being at the Dome helps. We've seen weird things happen late season at the Dome, especially even against good teams. I'm seeing 13 now. I guess it's moved a little bit towards Pitt, which is not surprising. I don't know. I think I would be pretty comfortable taking Pitt and the points there.
Yeah, same.
And by comfortable, I mean I'm probably going to do that later in the week.
I mean, based on what's happened the last 2 weeks, SU went from what? They were like 8-1 against the spread. Now they've got
8-3 against the spread now, yeah. So is Pitt. Both teams 8-3 against the spread. Something has to give.
Yeah, so I'm not loving SU's odds here. Moving away from the gambling aspect of things, I think Syracuse tries some things and gets a little creative, but I still don't see them putting up more than 24 in this game, and I just don't think that's going to be enough against like the number two offense in the country.
Yeah, I kind of see this one playing out the way these last couple have, where it's like competitive early. Syracuse is within a touchdown for like the first half, and then Pitt kind of runs away with it.
Yeah, I'm going to say begrudgingly like 45-24.
Yeah. I'll go a little closer, but not that much. I'm going to go 31-17.
All right. I mean, do you think Pitt like takes the foot off the gas? Or do you think?
I think it's going to be a slow to start. I think it's like a low scoring first half. Syracuse is in it. Maybe Syracuse is even up like 14-10, and then the second half's all Pitt.
All right, I think that's reasonable. We've been very wrong, disloyal idiots before. So maybe that happens again. I'm unfortunately 9-2 on the year. Picking Syracuse games straight up, like without the spread. So I don't like your odds here, especially based on that.
It's been tough. But I will say, if we pull this one out, like that last week BC game a couple years ago, the Schaefer Bowl year, this would blow that out of the water. I would love to ruin Pitt season, in as much, even though I think we all discuss often how non-rivalry this feels for a team that we've played every year for decades and decades, would still really enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, these teams face each other, what, every year since 55?
Something like that.
And no one has cared about it once the entire time, because both...
I cared when Chandler Jones couldn't return that interception for a touchdown the last time we played Pitt with a ball on the line in the final week of the season. But I didn't really care that it was Pitt, I just cared in general.
Yeah, I cared about
the season.
But yeah, Pitt is, I think to both sides, you know, Pitt and Syracuse are nuisances to each other. Pitt obviously has bigger fish to fry more often than not, in the form of, you know, West Virginia. I think they've tried to make Miami a thing, but realistically, and for us, I mean, Pitt should be in the conversation, but isn't. West Virginia is the rivalry I think we should actually have. BC is the rivalry we do actually have, despite the fact that both sides are just like exhausted in general, not just at each other, just in general.
We feel more for Clemson.
Yeah, Clemson is the internet rivalry that has spilled over onto the field, and then Penn State is the rival that every Syracuse fan wants.
Yeah, Pitt's like the long, like 40-year loveless marriage. Like we're just occupying the same space.
We're roommates.
Yeah, we're more roommates than conference lovers at this point. Yeah, it's tough, but you know, maybe we can find that spark this weekend with a nice shocking upset win to help ruin their aspirations for a big season.
I'd love it. Also, like realistically, it would just make my off season better, because then I don't have to hear like just every single day if I'm not like, you know, burning babers. Like I don't have to hear every single day about how he's, you know, one winning season in six tries.
I would love so much for Babers to just erase the concern over his own job status. Like I think we would all really, really welcome that. But unfortunately, like, you know, 5-7 is the exact out with a 3-game losing streak in blowout fashion, is the exact way to not do that. So yeah, let's cement things. Let's move forward. Obviously, I think he's coming back for next year. I just think like I feel like there'd be more smoke if he wasn't. And also, like, when you're should be Heisman caliber running back is like, yeah, I might start looking around, especially if Babers isn't there. It's kind of hard. Like, that means something. Yeah. Also, Sean Tucker snubbed so hard in the Doak Walker finalist.
Can I add my 2 cents about why this happened?
Because Breece Hall had a lot of hype entering the year and then had like a fine season, but got pushed through by people who don't pay attention.
Partly that, partly because
he's a really good player. I don't want to like diminish him, but he has not had the season Sean Tucker's had. Like not even close. Kenneth Walker, if you want to argue Kenneth Walker over Tucker, I will hear you. That's it. That's the only person.
Yeah. I mean, the other part of this is that most schools will like do a little bit of a PR campaign.
And Syracuse does not.
Yeah. And you and I, both as Football Writers Association members, did not receive an email.
No, I receive like 7 emails from Mississippi State about their players every day. And I didn't receive
send this new book every year with their Remington Award candidate.
These other schools play the game so much better, and it's not hard. Like, you just need one person to be on top of this, and it's really disappointing. I actually forgot about that, but it was mentioned in our own chats, like, how little SU does to promote something like Sean Tucker, who's having inarguably one of the two best running back seasons in college football this year. A lot of the college football internet's picked up on it. They know. The people who actually vote for these things, some of whom are not very online, like, they may have no idea.
It's unfortunate. But in any case, my children are home, so I guess we will call it there. Dan, thank you as always.
I enjoy that Syracuse's PR efforts are not for children consumption.
Of course. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Trinians and Absolute Podcast. You rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, Megaphone, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, and Orange.
Orange.